Okay, so thank you all for coming. Tonight is the final installment of this Mourning with Meaning series. If you talk about mourning in halacha, avelus, so it needs to come with meaning. It needs to come with significance. And that significance, the Rambam tells us in Hilchos Avel, in the Laws of Mourning in the 13th chapter, the Rambam says a very interesting line. Kol mi she'eino mis'abel kamo shetzivu chachamim hareze achzari. A person who does not mourn as the rabbis commanded, that person is achzari. How would you translate the word achzari?
Cruel. So what does it mean that a person is cruel if they don't mourn?
Right, they're insensitive. So here's a very interesting choice of words. A person who doesn't mourn adequately is insensitive. What does it mean that they're insensitive? It means that they're callous to the loss that they should be sensitive to, that they should be experiencing. So here's an interesting parallel in the Rambam in Hilchos Taanios. Here, the Rambam is talking about fast days, primarily focused on times of crisis. So the Rambam tells us that it's a mitzvah saseim in HaTorah. This is the beginning of Hilchos Taanis. Lizok ulahoria, to scream out, to blow b'chatzotzros with horns on crises that, God forbid, befall the Jewish people. And the Rambam says, v'dovar ze midarkei hatshuva, who? That is part of the ways of tshuva, of returning to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that b'zman, shebizman shetavu tzara v'yizaku aleh, that when something difficult comes upon us, v'yeidu hakol, everybody should know, shebeglal ma'aseim ha'roim hu'ralahem, that this is because of the bad things that they did, which is a very complex discussion in and of itself. Now in Halacha Gimel, the Rambam gives this word that I thought was interesting to compare. Aval, im lo yizaku, if people don't cry out to the Ribbono Shel Olam, v'lo yariu, ela yomru, dover zemi minin ka'olam iralanu, this just happened for nothing, for no reason, just happenstance. Vitzarazu nikra nikres, it just happened. Hareze derech achzarius. That is the way of achzarius, literally translated as cruelty. But it's obviously it's not cruelty, it's callousness, it's insensitivity. And I wonder if the Rambam is using that word in both contexts deliberately. Because what does the Rambam tell you? He says, if you don't get the message that Hashem is giving you and return to God, people are just going to continue in their evil ways. And the Rambam here in Hilchos Avol, what does he say in the next line? El yifchad v'yidag v'yifash v'yifash b'masa v'yachzar b'tshuva. A person who experiences a loss, part of avelus is supposed to be introspection and tshuva. And if a person doesn't do that, so then their mourning is lacking meaning. Now this is a very touchy subject. The Rambam does not say, although in Hilchos Taanios it's a little bit more direct and there's a lot of discussion about this, the Rambam does not say in Hilchos Avel that a person can identify what is the root cause of their suffering, certainly not with certainty. Somebody can't say, well, somebody said my relative died because such and such, unless you're a prophet. How could you say that? Rather, I don't think the Rambam is saying you should be looking for why this thing happened to you, but rather, what can you do in the face of this tragedy? And this is a much longer development, but the idea of asking, what is it about my life that I can do in light of this loss that will bring me back closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? So that's mourning with meaning. And that aspect of tshuva, according to the Rambam, is part and parcel of Hilchos Avelus. So that means that we need to now look at the mourning process as a catalyst for tshuva, as a catalyst for spiritual growth in our connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So to do that, when you talk about, let's say, something like the Holocaust, which is of such enormous magnitude, one can't possibly even wrap their head around it, you have, I think, an interesting and unique opportunity, because the Rambam earlier, that was in Perek Yud Gimel Halacha Yud Beis, Earlier, the Rambam says, "Ein bochen in halacha yud, ein bochen al hames yoser mishloshi yamim." You don't cry over a person who passed away more than 3 days. In Talmudic times, the avelus was kind of broken in two halves. First 3 days of shiva are called yemei bechi, and that's why in the old days, in the times of the Talmud, people didn't make shiva calls until after 3 days, unless you're a close family or close relatives. Today it's different because people's travel schedules and all kinds of other things. But in the old days, people didn't pay a shiva visit unless it was after the 3 days. That was yemei bechi. Those are the days of crying. Ve'in maspidim yoser al shiva, and you don't do eulogies beyond 7 days. Aval tamidei chachamim hakol rifi rov chachmasan. A Talmud Chacham, a great sage, so that is commensurate with his stature. If you have someone who is the greatest sage of the generation, so then that person deserves a tremendous amount of mourning and of crying. And the Rambam says there's a limit, not more than 30 days, because that's how much the Jews mourned for Moshe Rabbeinu. So you go back to the Holocaust, and you start opening up the volumes of memorial books, and you come across, of course, Mamish, the Holy 6 Million, and among those, you come across rabbis and scholars and pious tzaddikim from different communities all across Europe. And the list grows and grows and grows. There's an encyclopedia, and it doesn't even scratch the surface. There are two encyclopedias that I'm aware of rabbanim who were murdered in the Holocaust. One is Ela Eskera, the other one is, I think it was named Goldstein, a guy from Bnei Brak. Now it escapes me, I didn't write it down. I have a whole book just on Hasidic Admorim, who were murdered in the Holocaust. And the more that you research and learn, the more that you realize the extent to which the world of Torah was literally shattered, totally destroyed. So those people who are gone, we need to mourn their loss. And how do you mourn their loss? By reconnecting to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And we have this expression in the tradition that Divrayim Heinim Zichronim, their words are their memories. So if we have some words, not everybody do we have, many people we don't, but what we can learn from them can be an aliyah for their neshama, but also can be a way of inspiring us, because you can read some of these tshuvas and you will just see the most incredible, unspeakable mesiras nefesh. It's amazing. So tonight, we're going to do that just for a few minutes to survey a few tshuvas which we have in front of us. All of these tshuvas are related to the topic of kashrus, which is why I chose these specific ones, because they are focused in that one area, although you can pick many areas of halacha. And it's interesting that all the tshuvas that we're studying tonight are all authored by people who were not murdered by the Germans, as we will see, but they were all affected by the Shoah in different ways, and their questions and their answers reflect an incredible amount of mesiras nefesh, not just their spiritual strength to answer these questions in the midst of the most horrific circumstances, but also the commitment of the people who are asking. So let's begin. Yeah?
I just had a question. Sure. On the pshat of like what the Rambam's saying, that like anybody that doesn't like relate to this time is achsari, I feel like nowadays it's really hard to relate to it because it's so long ago. So if you're trying to relate, does that count?
Great. Awesome. So we could distinguish between different kinds of fast days, different kinds of memories. The Rambam in that context, in Hilchos Tanios, is talking about a person who is facing an imminent danger. Most notably in the Gemara and Tanis is about a lack of rain. So if a person is facing a crisis, and the Rambam says a person faces that crisis and doesn't have a religious response, he says that's derech achzaris. He's not sensitive to the religious nature of life. In addition to that, right, so that's if a person is facing an immediate crisis. The Rambam here in Hilchos Avel says a person who loses a relative and doesn't mourn them is also achzari. What you're pointing out is that we have a new challenge, and that is that the period of the 3 weeks and the 9 days and Tisha B'Av, that's not avelus chadasha, that's not new mourning, that's what we call avelus yeshana, old mourning. So it's actually a great challenge, because if it's, God forbid, avelus chadasha, somebody who lost a close relative, you don't have to educate them as to why they need to cry for their close relative. And if they don't, that's achzari. They obviously don't appreciate that person. They don't feel that loss. But the avoda, the purpose of the 3 weeks, is exactly that, to try to sensitize us. That's why you need 3 weeks. Because, unfortunately, you can't You can't wake up on Tisha B'Av morning without having thought about it beforehand and expect to sit on the floor and cry. You have to study it and think about it, meditate and prepare for it. And that's why there are practices that get us in that frame of mind, these practices of Avelos. But it's because this period is Avelos Yeshana, old Avelos, that it's more challenging. It's the Avelos Chadasha, the immediate Avelos that a person feels automatically. How many people, you know, stay up at night and at Chatzos recite Tikkun Chatzos and cry over the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash? Not too many people I know. So that's what we're trying to cultivate.
Okay, got it. Thank you.
Great? Okay. So let's begin with the Shailas and Tshuvas, this essay, Dvar Sinai. Dvar Sinai is authored by a prominent Talmud Chacham who is still living in Eretz Yisrael, who I had the personal privilege of meeting, who wrote a volume that exists in English that you can get. I believe it's called By Your Rod and By Your Staff, or Your Rod and Your Staff. The author's name is Rabbi Sinai Adler. Rabbi Sinai Adler, when I was learning in Karen B'Yavne, came to speak with us. Some of the fellows in the Kollel know him from his role as the Rosh Kollel of the Meretz Kollel in Mevaseret. Rav Sinai Adler is a prominent Talmud Chacham and is a Holocaust survivor and has written several works in Hebrew, and then there's that one translated work in English about his experience during the war. So here in this section, Dvar Sinai, She'ilos Begeitz Hamavos and then of Eretz Achaim, when he survived and got to Israel, he has this Shaila from the Theresienstadt ghetto from Tufshin Gimel. What's the Shaila? This is incredible. He says, we receive the food from the ghetto every day, and the ghetto kitchen, of course, was not kosher, and we had no other way of eating except for what they gave us. And sometimes they gave us meat, and it was horse meat, and we ate it because it was pikuach nefesh. So he says, I remember that it was told to me that im nekabel ba'oso yom chalav o dvar chalavi mutar lishtoso miyad. It was mutter to eat it right away. Do you have to wait, let's say an hour or 6 hours, depending on a topic in Yoredeya? Do you have to wait after eating treif meat before you eat milk? So we know that the Gemara tells us in Maseches Chulin that after a person eats meat, they need to brush their, need to wash out their mouth with something to drink, something to eat, and then there's a question, how long do you have to wait? So some are of the opinion have to wait no time, some an hour, some 6 hours, some have the minute to wait 3 hours, but that's between milk and meat, because there is an Isser of Basar B'Chalav, Minat Torah, the Isser of Basar B'Chalav is only if you cook them together, but Midrabanan, the rabbis told us there's even an Isser to eat them together. So therefore, the Chazal, over the years, gave us this Harchaka to tell us, don't eat meat until either the taste is gone from your mouth or the little shards, like the little pieces of meat, have disappeared from between your teeth. So let's say let's go with 6 hours. For one of two reasons, you're not going to drink milk until or eat cheese until after you waited 6 hours. So the question is that true also for Besar Behema Tumea? So Rabbi Adler says, he says, it's depending on the following Chakira. He says, it depends. If you say that if you were to mix horse meat and milk, well, wait a second, horse meat, if you mix that with milk, is that prohibited or permitted?
Prohibited.
Why is it prohibited? Okay, but you could tell me, wait a second, why is it prohibited? It's anyway, it's Besar Behema Tameh, it's already prohibited. So wait a second. Do the rabbis need to create a new Isser? Because Mida Oraisa, Basar B'Chalav, is only, let's say, cow's meat and cow's milk. Kosher meat and kosher milk. Not even Basar Nevela, a cow that died without being shechted properly. So did the rabbis institute a din of Basar B'Chalav, Mida Rabbanan, when the thing is already prohibited, Mida Oraisa? So that is a machlokas he quotes in the Achronim. It seems that the generally accepted approach, I think it posts in the Shach and the Shulchan Aruch, is that it's not Basar B'Chalav, but he says it depends on that argument. If you say like the Shulchan Aruch, that doesn't create Basar B'Chalav, because it's already prohibited because it's horse meat, then you don't have to wait 6 hours, because you're not in violation of any prohibition, even Midrabanan, by putting them together. But what we're sensitive to here, through this Shaila, is how people, even in the most horrible circumstances, were acutely aware of their spiritual identity and their commitment to achilas dvarim to eating kosher food. So that's shaila number one. Shaila number two comes, let's take a look at the packet that says She'ilos Hatshuvos Mimamakim. This tshuva was authored by Rav Ephraim Oshri, who was a rav in Kovno. Kovno was one of the great cities in Lithuania. Ir ve'em b'Yisrael, suburb of Vilna, tremendous Talmidei Chachamim. He wrote these tshuvas contemporaneous at that time. He wrote them on little snatches of paper that he could get a hold of, how he went back and put them together. It's an amazing, amazing story in and of itself. His obituary period, he lived till I think the age of 89. His obituary period in the New York Times about this incredible work. It's now, I think, 5 or 6 volumes, the Shalos and Tshuvos Mimamakim. Some of them, I think, were rendered in English. This is from the first volume of Shalos and Tshuvos Mimamakim. And he has an amazing shaila. He says, when Pesach came around, of course, we were living under this very, very harsh oppression. You know that the Germans initially made a pact with the Russians and split Poland, but then the Germans invaded and took over in the summer of 1941, they took over Lithuania. So now, under German control, Jews really suffered terribly before most of them were killed. He said, we had two shilas. Number one, imuto lechol kitnios arbis shchoros bepesach shehatzar hatzor hoimachalik. The Germans would hand out arbis, black beans. Can we eat that on Pesach? Well, wait a second. That's kitnios. Kitnios are legumes. And we have a minig among Ashkenazim not to eat kitnios on Pesach for a couple of reasons. Either because grains would get mixed into the bags that had beans, or because people wouldn't be scrupulous and could get them confused. Bean flour versus wheat flour. So can we be makel, be lenient to eat kitnios on Pesach in the Kovno ghetto? That's shaila number one. And shaila number two is that there were men who were able to procure dirty potato peels. And they were wondering if they could make matzah cakes out of taking some flour that they had watched and the potato peels. The problem is that the potato peels are filthy. And the question is, can you wash them and mix them together with the flour, or is that going to be a violation of creating chametz on Pesach? Yeah, question.
Why is any of this relevant if they could starve?
Oh, so what would happen if they starved?
They would die.
They would die. So we know that according to the strict letter of the law, according to the halacha, pikuach nefesh v'chai b'hem is doche everything. So what are they asking? Right? The answer is that the devotion is so intense to the halacha and to the Torah is that if there's any way that we could possibly navigate this without having to violate the halacha, that's what they're saying. That's what we'd rather do. Obviously, if they're literally on the threshold of death, the question is, you know, of course, if it's pikuach nefesh, as we said before, even treif meat you're allowed to eat. But there, and it's also, I guess, it's an important ha'ara that you're making. They're kind of living, and if you study the descriptions, it's kind of like this very weird reality that on the one hand, the life in the ghetto was abnormal. It was not human. On the other hand, life in the ghetto, in certain respects, did go on as normal. They had daily activities. People went to work. Some people had forced labor, but there was some semblance of normal life. They had rations of food that some people got. So the question was, how far did they have to push themselves on Pesach when it came to these halachos? So if they were on the threshold of death, Rachman Litzlan, that's a different story. So there are two questions, and he gives you two answers. He said, number one, he quotes from a Chasam Sofer, that you're not allowed to permit kitnios unless you have kibbutz of gadol of chachme Ashkenaz or Rubam. But if it's a shasat chag gadol, if it's a super, super emergency circumstance, then you don't need to get the rabbis together. It's just permitted to eat the kitnios. And obviously, he says, this is an exigent circumstance. This is a shasat chag gadol. And then on the second point, he introduces us to a great Talmud Chacham, a great posuk, one of the great Manhige Hador, the greatest Rabbanim in Vilna, whose name, if you look on the right-hand side on the bottom of the next page, which gets into a complicated sugya in Maseches Psachim about mei peros, about vegetable juice or fruit juice making matzah, whether that creates chametz quickly or not. He quotes from Hagon Rav Avraham Dov Ber Kahana Shapira Zatzal. There was a great rabbinic leader who died actually not long thereafter, not at the hands of the Germans. He died, I guess you would say, of natural causes, but he was a totally broken man because of his situation, who was essentially the great rabbinic luminary whose influence spread far and wide in Lithuania, and he was known as Rav Avram Kahana Shapira, Rav Avram Dovber Kahana Shapira, who is an author of some very important tshuvos and svarim and achronim, very, very important posek. And so what you see here is that he is providing this kind of like great Gadol Hador, is providing halachic guidance for the Jews and for the other Rabbanim. So Rav Ashbi was a young Rav at that time, and he's telling you, this is what I heard from the great Gaon, Rav Avram Kahana Shapira, who said that you can use the potato peels, but you should scrape them off, you shouldn't use water, because if you use water, we're concerned that between the potato juices and the water, that's going to hasten the chimutz process. So you should try to keep these, you should keep these away from water, so that they should not become chametz. And you could use the potato peels and the flour, even though there are some Rishonim who would be more machmir about the potato peels themselves because of May Peros, but he says in this circumstance that would be permitted. So this is a psak not just from Rav Ashri, but from a great Gaon who was living at that time. Let's go to the third of our fourth Shailos, and that is this Shailos Uchuvas Birkas Chaim, authored by Rav Chaim Yitzchak Yerucham of Altstadt. This sefer, a collection of Shailos and Tshuvas of this Rav Chaim Yitzchak Yerucham, who died during the war, although he did not die in the camp. He just passed away. He spent some time in Vienna and then in Krakow, and then ultimately he was under Nazi persecution. I mean, he was under Nazi persecution, but then it became very intense. He had a son. He had several children. One son who ran away, was able to escape, a long story describes, and came to America and published these Tshuvas after the war from his late father, and he describes how they corresponded a lot. In the beginning of this Sefer, Birkas Chaim, he has a whole kuntris, he has a whole section describing his father's life, his grandfather, what the family they came from, what happened to his father during the war, how he found out that he died because the son was in America and they couldn't get any mail. And I forget what he calls the kuntris habacha, of the wailing, of crying. And it's the story of this Rav and his life, and how his whole world had been destroyed, and their whole community had been destroyed, and the legacy of his grandparents, and his whole world. It's a heart-wrenching story. So here you have not just an amazing person, an amazing story, you have a shoel, a person who's asking, which is amazing. And this is from when he was, during his time in Krakow. This is in Birkas Chaim and Shalos and Tshuva, Simon Membeis. Go to the last page. I'm skipping the first section. He says, "Michtavo miyom gimel shavua ze kibalti hayom." I got your letter today. Nepach libi bekirbi. There's a lot of flowery language in this tshuva. My heart was turned over within me. Me'ay chamar maru bekori tzoros achina b'nei Yisrael. I'm reading about the suffering of the Jews, and my heart and my stomach is turning. Hashem should have rachmanos all this. Va'al dvar she'elaso, third line. Ki biyosu b'machanas rikuz, when he was in a machanes rikuz, which you see here in the Yiddish, concentratzelas lager, a concentration work camp. Ochal kol pam ma'acholam asurim. The person, when he was in the concentration camp, the shoel, ate tray food. And now what? Libo doeg v'rotz l'kabel of tshuva. He wants to do tshuva. So what's the answer? Do you do tshuva, and how do you do tshuva for eating tray food in a concentration camp, in a work camp? So he says, first of all, hine haya, it was probably most times kmo onus, coerced, or al kalponim shogig, or at least the shogig. And onus, he says, and person who was coerced, ain't tzarach kapara, doesn't need to do anything to receive atonement. Aval shogig, tzarach kapara, that was just by accident, that was just negligence. He says, next paragraph, lefi ma shekasav, kvodo neiroyar, ira shahayak tzas kmo mezid. maybe he kind of intended wantonly or somehow volitionally to eat that. He says, and this is such an interesting line, he says, Ulam, however, Misha haya bediku yivkayotzi bo, why would you have wanted to eat that food? Even a little bit bemazed, because you were bedikui. What is dikui? Depression. Think about the mental state of somebody in a concentration camp. Are you going to say, Gam nira lomar she kipru, are you going to say that the person was of clear mind, that when they wanted to eat that non-kosher food, they were eating it bemazed? They were wantonly eating treif. They were depressed. They were so tzibrachin. That's not really mazed. And then he says even further something amazing. He says, Gam nira lomar, you could also say, Shekipur hayesurim, the suffering that you had, Shahayusham bedakau. I'm sorry, I misread this. Olam, Mishahaya bedakau kayotzibo libo balimo, it's not dikaon, it's dakau. I misread that. But the punchline was the same. If a person was in Dachau in that kind of mental state, in that experience, are you going to really call that mazid? And not only that, right, libo balimo hayalav and davar l'osher, he couldn't think straight. Gam nir loma shekipra yisum shahayisham b'dachau b'buchenwald, rachman al islan. And not only that, even if there was an element of volition, the suffering that he had, that probably provided the kapar. Now the end of the tshuva adds, he says, well, however, if you want to know, if somebody's really suffering and thinking about this and wants to do tshuva, well, they can do is they can fast from now, when you get this letter, Monday and Thursday, 20 days until Rosh Hashanah. Because we know there's something about 40 days of fasting, and he goes into the details in the second paragraph. But this tshuva is really amazing on a couple of levels. Number one, you see the devotion of the Shoel, who says, you know, I'm worried about my spiritual life now. I'm worried about the effect that that had on me. What do you mean? You were in such a bad state. No, I'm still worried. And the answer is interesting. And it says, look, you are worried, maybe it was mamezid, maybe you wanted to eat that food. But let's think about the context. Let's think about the mental state that you were in when you were in that circumstance. And that can't possibly be considered mazid. That's maybe shogig, but it's probably honest. A person is coerced, and then in that case, they don't even require kapara. Let's go to our last tshuva. And this is perhaps the most bitter. It comes from a work that's called Ali Maroro's Bitter Leaves, authored by Rav Yeshua Moshe Aronson. Rav Yeshua Moshe Aronson was a Rav in Sonic. He spent much of the time in the war in a work camp called Kunin, a little bit of time in Auschwitz, survived the war, came to Israel, became a Rav in Petach Tikva, and he published this work, which includes his diary, Shilas and Tshuvas, and Thoughts. Here he has, on page 248, to the beginning of Chodesh Iyar Tavshin Hei, which means you're talking the spring of 1945. What's happening in the spring of 1945 historically? What's happening? Right, the war is coming to an end. The Germans are retreating. And what do? They drive the Jews further to the interior of Germany on death marches. So they're taking the Jews from various camps. And in this case, they're going from Buchenwald to Theresienstadt. He describes, Rav Aronson, that they stopped and stayed in a field. It's impossible to imagine what this means. For 14 days. Under SS guard, and they were not given food. So some of the people started to eat the grass, some of the people died, and then he gets asked a question from Yedidi Zion Pei. He doesn't give his name, he just gives his initials, Zion Pei. He says, this man, Zion Pei, says to the Heiliger Rebbe, he says, Rabbi, I think I'm at the end. Is it permitted for me to try to extend my life just a little bit by eating the flesh of a corpse of some other Jew who died? When Rav Aronson hears this, he describes, he screamed out, he cried, he was so broken, Ribono shel Olam, kach es nafshi, take my soul, va'al tevi'eni l'madrega nemucha zu chas v'shalom. Don't bring me to this low level. He says, I told him the truth. The truth is that it is permitted. Cannibalism is permitted because, like we said before, v'chai b'hem, it trumps everything. If it's going to save your life, it's going to save your life. He says, we know that the Medrash describes that the Churban, right? We have it in the Kinos on Tisha B'Av. Im tochal nashim piryam. Women who ate their own children. So this did happen. But he says, amazing, he says, I told him, listen to me. I'm afraid. It's a crazy cheshbon. Oh, horrible. He says, what am I afraid of? That if people start to cannibalize and eat the flesh of the deceased, what they might do is they might hasten the death of somebody who's holding by the end. They might start, God forbid, to come to kill people. And then what's going to happen when they see eating the flesh? The SS is going to notice that. And then, he said, maybe they're going to have an excuse to kill all of us because they say, you see, they really are subhuman because they're cannibals. Rahman al-Islam. He says, my words entered his ears, and just after a little period, the SS received a command to take us to Terezin, and we were saved. The man did not die. So the Biurim here describes this in greater halachic detail about the prohibition of cannibalism. Is it midrabanan, or is it like the Rambam says, it's midaraisa, is it an isarase, or is it a kal v'chomer not to eat non-kosher animals? But whatever it is, even though on the books technically is permitted, you know, God forbid a person should bring themselves to that level. So he quotes also from another truth from Imam Akim, who says that Rav Asher, he had this question, but he never heard anybody who actually did it. Although, there, you know, it's impossible to generalize. And I did read there were some counts of some instances on occasion of cannibalism in different places. By and large, the Rabbanim are saying they didn't have this. So you see that the spiritual sensitivity of people is so refined that even when they had the heter, they could have eaten the corpse. They didn't for these other more noble reasons. So you talk about mourning with meaning, you talk about a way to be inspired. You look at these stories, which are just superhuman, and you say, wow, if these people, under those circumstances, had that type of religious and Torah sensitivity, alachas kam v'kama, we who are living, you know, the Baruch Hashem has blessed us with an easy, good life. So we should think, what does it mean for us? How can we take a lesson for ourselves? How can we enhance our spiritual sensitivity as we go through this mourning with meaning process? Hopefully will be ended very soon by the Mashiach, but if not, to make sure that it is of great significance and great meaning for each one of us.